This is really, really important, especially in a hospital setting. What we want you to feel is that not only does everyone in the room trust in you and feel love for you and feel respect for you as the birthing mom, but they actually have those same feelings toward each other.
Hello, and welcome back to the Your Grade podcast with your host, Unique Hammond. Today's guest is Morgan Lynn. She is a birth and postpartum doula, a cook, and a biodynamic gardener in Los Angeles. She specializes in seasonal Ayurvedic cooking and self-care for preconception, pregnancy, and postpartum. I've known Morgan for a while now, and I just adore her. It's interesting because I often get people asking me if the Bean Protocol is safe for pregnancy. And if you think about it, Ayurveda, which works a lot with legumes, has been around forever. And women have been eating in this beautiful style of legumes and proteins and vegetables for as long as one can really probably remember and longer. So absolutely safe to eat in this way. Ayurveda has obviously been around. It's an ancient wisdom. And the Bean Protocol isn't far off. It really pulls in a lot of the principles of eating and deeply nourishing ourselves from fertility through pregnancy and beyond. Really, I think the practice of preparing our bodies for pregnancy, nourishing ourselves during pregnancy and afterwards, has been a lost art. And I love that Morgan offers not just the wisdom, but the support to make that happen. I know when I was a young mother, I was just living in survival mode. I didn't have a lot of support, and I wasn't the best chef at that time. I was 23 with a baby on my hip, and I was just in survival mode, trying to get through the sleepless nights and the nursing and all of that stuff. It was an overwhelming time. And I think now of like how amazing, what balm for the soul it would have been to have that kind of support. So Morgan is a beautiful soul, and I'm excited to share her wisdom with you today. I also wanted to remind you, sign up for my newsletter. My next 12-week group is open in May 3rd, and registration will be opening soon to those on the wait list. It is an intimate group, because, well, I have found that you kind of have to strike the balance just right. It needs to be big enough where there's great energy and small enough where everybody feels comfortable at whatever level they are at in sharing and being part of the group and the healing experience. So go ahead and sign up for that newsletter. You can also sign up for the waitlist on my webpage, yourgrade.com, and enjoy this conversation. I did. Morgan, welcome to the Your Grade podcast. I'm really excited to have you on. I've been following your work online, and obviously we have some clients in common, and I'm really excited to have you here. I have a lot of pregnant clients right now, or clients who are preparing to have children and taking care of mamas before birth. You're a birth and postpartum doula, correct?
Yes. Yeah, I even do some preconception preparation.
Beautiful.
It's a long journey together sometimes. Yeah.
That is one of my questions coming up, is like how long you typically work for a family, but it sounds like maybe that changes depending on what somebody is seeking.
Yeah.
So I guess my first question is what drew you to become a pre-birth postpartum doula?
Yeah, well, it's been a meandering path. It's really funny. Like the earliest root of it was probably studying in college, because I have a degree in international development. My formal education, I did a lot of work in what we now call the global South, or economically undeveloped parts of the world. And I did a lot of nonprofit work. And, you know, there's different sectors within international development, but I particularly did a lot of work with women. You know, when I was studying, when I was living in other parts of the world, in rural parts of the Caribbean, in Africa, places like that, I started to sort of notice and observe that a lot of the women we were doing projects with, when they had their babies, they were almost never separated from their babies in these more traditional collective societies. So I would see women in our sewing collective be pregnant, have their baby, come back after a period of time with their babies tied on, in their babies in a sling. And I also noticed that the babies really never cried. And I remember even, in my late teens, early 20s, during that time, thinking back to my mom's stories about her first few weeks postpartum after having me, her only baby, and saying something like, I had to go back to work at 8 weeks and I cried so much from the separation, right? And I remember thinking to myself, well, I think it's probably counter our own physiology, our own biological design to actually separate.
For mother and baby.
It is. Really interesting fact is that we all seem to accept that it's not only unconscionable, but illegal to separate a mother dog from her puppies before 8 weeks. But we separate from our babies so often, and it's just become a part of our culture. So that was kind of an early thing. And then I didn't get into this practice formally for a while. I graduated college. I did some things. I have a background in farming. So I trained in biodynamic French intensive, those methods of farming. And I've farmed up north in here in California in Marin County. And then I was farming on the east end of Long Island in New York. And it was one summer I was wintering over, because farming, of course, especially in the Northeast, is seasonal. So of course, like a lot of the young farmers, we were growing our own food. We were cooking our own food. I have a background, particularly growing food specifically for restaurants. So it was a food farming culture always that was intertwined. And as I was wintering over, I was on a little island in between the North and South Fork on the east end of Long Island called Shelter Island. I'm sure some of you all will know that. And there were a lot of babies born that winter. And so because a lot of these young families were my friends, one in particular I'd been farming with, I just kind of participated in their journey. And I came in and I cooked food and just helped out in any way that they needed. And I worked closely with a veteran birth doula there who's really evidence-based and really incredible. She was a great early mentor of mine. And she said, you really should consider doing this. We really need this. This is something that's needed. This kind of support during this time. So this was 10 years ago. This is many years ago. But that was how I sort of got into it. And when I first started, I was just doing postpartum care. Started in New York and I came to LA the next year. So my earliest days, I was just doing postpartum care. And then I started to realize that if we were going to optimize outcomes, when my clients were coming to me cold out of the labor experience and they hadn't been prepared to advocate for themselves, to observe a physiologic birth, we couldn't quite optimize as well in the postpartum time if we were starting at that point. We had to back up and have a more positive experience in labor. And then once I started doing birth work, I realized actually we needed to back up into pregnancy if we really wanted to continue to optimize things. And then even at that point, I realized it's actually preconception.
Fertility. It's the fertility.
Right? Which at that point, you kind of get to the threshold of the cycle, right? Because optimal fertility, a lot of experts will agree, is really optimal wellness. Fertility is a byproduct of a balanced state. And of course, there are many, many issues women are facing today. But if we put intentional, attention into preparing our body for pregnancy, there is a lot of empowerment in that. And I do suggest, like, everyone write their birth plan before they actually get pregnant, they actually conceive. That's the best time to write your birth plan, right? And to know how your fertility works. We love the medical community. We know that they offer something that we can't in an emergency. They have all kinds of technology that help keep us safe in ways that we haven't for, centuries. But also there's a whole scope that's missing in standard care. And that is just, what is the anatomy physiology of our body? So I want the clients that I work with, I want them to understand how their body works, how to take care of their body, because that's going to optimize their outcomes. over time.
Absolutely. I think we have this really interesting thing that I don't know if you see as well, but there is not a lot of preparation for the man and the woman going into having children, which now the science is even showing how important it is for the man to be preparing his body to conceive a child, where it was just like thought that, oh, it's just all the woman because she carries the child, right? Yeah. And then there is this very American approach of, oh, I'm pregnant, I can eat whatever I want. I'm like,
Those are the medical indications.
yeah. So you look at this where most people slide in sideways to fertility, right? Unless they can't get pregnant. And then there's a lot of anxiety around it. But most people, you know, will jokingly say, oh yeah, I spent a weekend in Vegas drinking and conceived, you know. But really, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, what I really believe is that is what you're saying is like deep care and nutrition and understanding in fertility, preparing the body to carry a child, really having that wellness, and then carrying that through pregnancy and into postpartum, because all of these milestones are massive changes for the human body, for the woman's body, and mental health and physical health. What are your thoughts on that?
After a while, after I first, after I got into the practice the first couple of years, after that point, I went and I also started my formal training in Ayurveda. And I actually mentor with a medical doctor, an Indian medical OBGYN, who also is an Ayurvedic practitioner and comes from a long lineage of Ayurvedic doctors and midwives. I trained in the blending of preventative care, where we, Ayurveda. I love Ayurveda. And what I love about Ayurveda, I'm going to use a quote from my friend, Julie Bernier, who's an incredible teacher and Ayurvedic practitioner, Ayurvedic doctor. And she always explains Ayurveda as if your body were a machine, Ayurveda is the manual to the machine. So, Ayurveda, there's a text called the Charaka, and it's kind of like the manual to the human body in all the states. And it's huge, it's seven volumes. And of that complete ancient text that lets us know how to balance our bodies, how to understand the constitution of our bodies, how to take care of the body through the changes of environment, state, psychological state, emotional state, physical state, a quarter of that is dedicated to the childbearing year. So there is huge, huge, huge importance on this time. And really, what happens in this time, and we know this from research, right? It's one of the most significant shifts. You can rewrite your genetic code in this time. You can solve things. Autoimmune conditions sometimes in pregnancy will resolve or shift or change. When we open for pregnancy, because it is a type of opening on many levels, when we open, it's an opportunity to really rewire things, reset the intention. And I think setting that intention and really giving conscious attention and effort to this time, it's also our first earliest lessons in mothering, especially if it's the first baby. If we can really start to exercise that practice of mothering ourselves first, you get into the groove of observing, really, attuning to your own self with baby inside, right? And then once you've started that slow, gradual separation, which is a slow, gradual process, you're more attuned to baby. So, the goal is that we're empowering ourselves to really be the agent for our own health and to know that we can resolve a lot of issues ourselves. And if we can get to them early, even better. This is the gift of preventative care, right?
Yeah, and if we have a new cellular body every 7 years, as it is said, you could almost say that your preparation for motherhood to conceive could start 7 years earlier, right? To begin that transition and that nourishment, that deep nourishment in practice of like, oh, when I'm this age, I want to become a parent. What are some nourishing practices that I can put in place to begin that journey towards motherhood? It's such an incredible time. Actually, when my autoimmune was flaring, I was only 34. And the Chinese medicine doctor I was working with, he's like, you know, if you got pregnant, it might go into remission. And I was like, Yeah, but what if it didn't? And then I'm crapping my pants with a baby on board. That would really suck, because I'd had two kids previously, right? So I thought long and hard about it because I was like, whoa, if I didn't, that would be wild. And honestly, I don't know if you've ever seen this, but in my practice, I've actually seen autoimmune disorders by the women not nourishing themselves properly and not taking the time to care for themselves, actually that time to elicit an autoimmune disorder, which I thought was profound.
Yeah, and I think it's important to remember that I think about this from a farming perspective also. Pregnancy is really depleting for the body. So this is why preconception is so important, because you want your body to have a full nutrient stock so that when you build a skeletal system and a set of organs and hair and fingernails and eyelashes and everything it takes to create a baby, you're not actually depleting your own stores. And then again, going into the farming lens, like what do we do in, what is farming all about? It's about enriching the soil. Really, that's the crux of farming, making sure that the soil is mineralized and has the proper nutrients in order to support healthy, vibrant crops. The body's actually similar. If you've grown a beautiful baby and birthed a beautiful baby and doubled your blood volume and created an entire placenta, which is an organ that supports a whole human being, once that's expelled, you want to replenish, right? In farming, we cover crop. So we would grow in a section of the field, you would harvest that, and then you would let that rest and, amend with whatever you amend with, bone meal and blood meal and gypsum, things that remineralize the soil, because that is how you replenish. Same thing in the postpartum time. Right? You want to ease yourself back into your diet in the postpartum time. And there's a whole set of practices for Ayurveda about that. And you want to be remineralizing the body. You want to be reintroducing nutrients so that you protect your own health for the next
Right.
years.
Yeah, because we see a lot of postpartum depression. And I think that's such an interesting depletion. Yeah, on such a deep level. I love your connection to farming because it's so spot on. That biodynamic farmer, and my father-in-law was a biodynamic farmer.
Oh, wow.
And so I got to, through him, learn a lot about biodynamic farming. And it's such a beautiful practice. It's also really with the seasons, right? It's not, and with the moon, and it's beautiful.
It's very scientific, you
Yeah.
know. Here's the thing, too. Actually, when you look at research, when you look at really good research, a lot of the research actually backs up this ancient wisdom, right? Like, if you look at the balance of the seasons, research a lot of times, will support that, which is really interesting and
Yeah,
really.
and a lot of times science is behind in some of those practices because a lot of times what science will focus on are things that make product, right? So they're not always focused on things that heal, I find. They're looking at things that optimize or medications that whatever. So I almost feel like in some ways science catches up to ancient wisdom. Or it struggles to catch up with ancient wisdom because you're looking at practices, whether it's Ayurveda or Chinese medicine, that have been around for such a long time, which were these traditional modalities of healing. I am curious because you work with Ayurveda, and I did spend some time with an Ayurvedic medicine doctor in my healing journey. Are all women kapha in the pregnancy process, or do you cook meals for dosha?
So my scope is a doula because I'm not a practitioner. Some of my clients will work, with a practitioner where we're actually balancing their own dosha with the pregnancy dosha. Now, pregnancy at the end tends to be a more of a pitta constitution. It's a lot of fire. You have a lot of heat imbalance. Your digestion is like ramping like crazy. Any pregnant lady at the end, she's hot and she's hungry and she's tired, right? Also, she can
And a
digest.
little swollen.
Right? They have a lot of skin flare-ups, you can get rashes and sensitive to the heat and things like that. It's opposite, right, of the Vata state of the postpartum time. And it makes a lot of sense, right? End of pregnancy, you're high production. What does it take to build a baby, to actually, if you think of a factory making cars or like doing some high production activity, it takes fire, it takes energy, it takes electricity, it takes whatever, coal. Our bodies are kind of the same. Like it's taking a lot of fire to really like full steam ahead at that at the end, right? Your blood volume has doubled, right? You're swollen, there's fluid, there's amniotic fluid, there's placenta. It's just a full, heavy, hot state of being. And you need a lot of fuel, which is why your digestion is so ramped up. When women go into labor, that state actually flips. You know, it's the fastest change in state, I would argue, in the human experience, because in the matter, in 1 to 2 days, a very short amount of time, you're expelling a ton of fluid, a ton of blood, the placenta, the baby, the amniotic fluid. And the uterus, as we know, actually takes 6 weeks or so to involute or return back to its pre-pregnant state. So the early days postpartum, not only has a mom expended an enormous amount of energy, right? That's birth is very rigorous physically, emotionally, spiritually. You're also left in sort of this internally open state, right? Before, the uterus had enlarged, but it was filled with all this warm, dynamic material. After birth, it's left open. So that air and space imbalance is in Ayurveda what we call vata. So this is a airier, colder state of being. And your digestion at that point is quite weak. So if you, I tell my clients, if you imagine at the end of pregnancy, your digestive fire is like a bonfire. By early postpartum, it's down to a blue flame. So this is why, as you're considering your diet, you want to ease yourself in with these, you know, lots of really nurturing, warm, very well-cooked, soft, high fat content foods, because if we put too much on top of that blue flame, it'll snuff it out. So what we want to do is nourish the body, because you still have high nutritional needs, but we want to give you food in a way that your body can receive without having to overtax the delicate digestive system at that time. So it's a gradual, we're gradually bringing you through the postpartum time, stoking the digestive fire, building the milk, right?
How in your practice, how do you focus on building the milk?
Well, the biggest thing, and this is my free advice to everybody, and a lot of people listening, this is going to be the first time you've ever heard this, and this is so sad, right? There is an initiation period, right? The first thing that you're going to do after your baby is born is focus on initiating the milk. So many women have their baby and they don't realize that mature milk doesn't come in for 3 to 5 days, right? Second baby, sometimes that comes in a little sooner. It can come in really soon, right? But sometimes it takes up to 5 days, sometimes a little longer. So in that period of time, actually supporting the physiology of the mother-baby dyad is really crucial, especially if you're having hospital birth. And we love the hospital, but the hospital is, you know, it's a production. There are certain things that have to happen in order for the hospital to operate on schedule and efficiently that aren't always in line with optimizing outcomes. One of these things is maximizing your skin-to-skin contact, right? So I tell all my clients, when that baby separates at the umbilical cord, they should plug back in on the chest of the mom. A lot of moms are like, what? But I need to sleep, you know, I need to take a rest. That's okay. But do as much skin to skin as you possibly can. Baby should always be on mama more than baby is swaddled with a hat on off of mama. This is crucial until the milk comes in, right? This is the physiology of the mother-baby dyad. And we pull this research from medical anthropology, but it's not highlighted enough in standard care medicine, right? Because we have formula that we can give. A baby can still survive, I would say, without supporting these, right? We have other
Right.
options to reach goals, but for, you know, for moms who are really focusing on, you know, the breastfeeding goal, particularly exclusive breastfeeding, the initiation period is really crucial. right? And there's a whole physiology that happens, or babies are born. If they come here on the chest, there's pheromones that are coming off the top of the baby's head that you're inhaling in this position. This is for anybody who's holding the baby skin to skin. So mom should be holding the baby skin to skin. Baby's other parent should be holding that baby skin to skin when mom's taking a break. Inhaling those pheromones releases dopamine in the brain. Puppies have this too. If you've ever smelled puppy breath, that sweet, like delicious smell, a newborn baby's head, the scent coming off is completely intoxicating, euphoric. So I say, get in as much as you can, because it's also,
I'm going to start sniffing baby heads.
You know, head huffers, right?
Head huffers.
Keep an eye on people around your baby. They're head huffers. It's like bloodhounds.
When my daughter was born, I did it in a hospital, but I did not let them take her off of my chest. Like when she was born, even when they cut the cord, she was on my chest. I didn't let them wash her. And they were like, okay, crazy hippie. I was like, do not wash her. Do not take her away. Just leave her here and let her connect with me. And I want to connect with her. That wasn't Ayurvedic. It was very much my hippie upbringing of like, baby should be with mama, you know, and feeling and touching each other. And so I love what you're saying. And I hope everybody, you know, mamas out there really take it in, because I do think it's not just a major transition for the mama. It's the major transition for the little human.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, and then really understanding the needs of the postpartum system too, because those early days, it's really delicate. A lot of moms have really low appetite in the beginning, so you want to ease yourself in. And this is where, like, we love Bean Protocol. I love Bean Protocol because it's, you know, it's very, very similar to how, you know, the formula is for the postpartum time too. Lentils, the first thing that we give moms, a combination of lentils and rice. You know, very high liquid ratio to the legume ratio when we're preparing, and they're slow cooked. So you almost have this uniform, you know, not to use the word gruel, but puree, right?
Is it a khichdi or a...
Yeah, like different types of khichdis and broths, beautiful, you know, nice, beautiful broths, but lots of warming, really well oleated, lots of healthy fats in the beginning, really high mineral contents in the cooking, good proteins, good legumes, good grains, good fats, and good spices.
And do you do the spices based on, are all women in the same dosha? I think you said, was it air or fire? Is it more?
Yeah, postpartum time is an air, is air.
So your spices, do they align more in that time?
Well, there's three factors, right? This is where it gets confusing, but it's also where it's really fun. The three factors are the universal postpartum or pregnancy dosha, which is either pitta or vata. Then there's the climate that we're in. So it might be slightly different in the middle of winter in New York than it is in Los Angeles, right?
Wow.
Kind of climate. And then there's mom's dosha. So a mom who is really strong pitta or kapha, when she goes into the postpartum time, she may have a slightly different experience in her constitution with that vata introduction. Moms who are very, very vata will experience, you know, stronger vata symptoms or imbalances when they go into the vata state postpartum. So it's always a little bit of a play. And when I do postpartum care or pregnancy care, you know, if I'm working directly with someone, it's always tailored to their whole, you know, individual scene. But, you know, I write a lot of just sort of universal recipes. I release a collection every season of just here's a little pregnancy collection. Here's a postpartum collection. And that's universal. So that's just saying, here's some vata balancing recipes for the postpartum time. And that's always beneficial. No one has to get overwhelmed by all these layered. It's a lot to take in.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. I mean, I think for the,
for me, but
for me too. Oh,
they start.
I love it.
But it is fun. But anytime we're eating intentionally and, you know, looking at what's growing around us, the foods that are in season are naturally conducive to balancing, because what's thriving in the natural world is always thriving in the conditions based on what your body needs, right? So if you look at winter vegetables, these are a lot of root vegetables, things that grow under the ground. They have, they produce more vitamin D in our bodies because they're designed naturally to thrive in lower light conditions. Just as an example, if you look at, the hot weather crops, the juicy tomatoes and the cucumbers, they have a lot, they have a much higher water content, right? Because what eats those, what consumes those is going to need to be hydrated in a different way. So nature is very intelligent. And I think a lot of times we're looking to nature for following nature more in line with the natural rhythms.
But I think that there is, I feel like there's a lot of confusion because people can grow things in a closed structure year round. And so many people are like, well, what is in season anymore? What does season even mean? There's a disconnection. And I think you can go to the farmer's market, but then you will go to the farmer's market and you'll see all these summer vegetables there because they're growing them in
In-house, like a hot house or a
a
greenhouse.
hothouse. I really dedicate myself to eating seasonally because I actually feel the best when I eat seasonally, period. I love so much of everything that you're saying. So if a woman who is pregnant is listening, what are your suggestions? What are you really focusing on in that time in pregnancy?
In pregnancy, yeah, there's always two things. There's kind of the universal, and then there's the individual. Right. So universally, I think understanding the nutritional needs, the evidence-based nutritional needs in pregnancy is really important. I think you're a great resource, Unique. I also think as early as you can, read Lily Nichols's book, right? I feel like a lot of people know this, but it's the best evidence-based research I know, and it's really organized really well to understand pregnancy nutrition. That's a really, really great resource. Following that, you'll be so well nourished all through pregnancy. I think that's a great resource. And I have, I write recipes off of that. That's sort of how, that's my go-to for functional nutrition. So understanding what are the building blocks of, pregnancy nutrition. And then I take it and I run everything through Ayurveda. So I make it a little easier to digest. As far as writing recipes, that's a really great resource. And then I would say I always think working with a really experienced birth doula, especially if it's your first baby, is really important. And work with your doula as early as possible. In order to optimize your outcomes, curate your birth plan with your doula. This is really important. You should be interviewing your care providers and you should know your goals before you interview your providers. I actually encourage everybody to write their birth plan or their birth map, which is what I call it, because you could always, usually a birth map is if we're here, we will go here. If we're here, we'll go here, But write that plan or that map actually preconception.
Smart.
Because if you know your vision, if you know that, conception is a phase you're going to enter into in the next 18 months. Try to get that vision for your birth. Try to understand what kind of care you'll want, where you'll want to have your baby. Are you going to want midwifery care? Are you going to want OB care in a hospital? What's your vision for that? So that you can actually make changes to your provider options during open enrollment.
Smart, so smart.
The earlier you start to think about these things, the more open your options are, right? And a birth doula really helps. Because we're in there every day and we see different preferences. We see different styles of care from the providers. So the birth doulas can really say, I understand your vision. Here are three options that are aligned with that vision. Here's one that, is more of a concierge model if you're willing to have some out-of-pocket expenses. Here are two that are in network with your insurance, things like that. So it really, doula care really helps streamline things.
Was it traditionally, because I always think back at like women have been having children forever, but women were also more in, I don't want to say tribe because not everybody was, well, maybe we all were traditionally tribal, but you had a midwife, which maybe would have been a medicine woman, right? And there would have always been care for a woman, and women, at certain points in our history didn't have to get back to work, right? So there wasn't like the have the baby and hand the football off and away you go. Or maybe because you were in community, other people did step up and help with the child care because it was communal. I think there's so much disconnection and, yeah. and we don't have the kind of support of community that we used to have as women.
I mean, look, human beings traditionally, like we are a collective species. So we yeah. are designed in community oriented. And of course, like centuries ago, when we were still in that societal organization, again, like there was no birth control. So there were a lot, there were big families. There were, you would have a whole clan, like you would have lots of relatives and tons of neighbors, and the women took care of each other. So if you had a baby, when you read the ancient records of this time, definitely in Ayurveda and even in India now, I was traveling in India not 10 years ago, and a friend of mine was pregnant and she had moved back to her mother's house about 32 weeks in pregnancy, and she was living there until she and her husband, you know, had moved back in for their first baby until, you know, a few months postpartum. That's still the culture, is that you actually return to your mom's house. The whole family goes back to the mother's house where the women will take care of them. Or in some other places, you will stay in the midwife's house. So there's a designated place where you have your baby, but then you don't actually move for a period of time. And, you know, other people in the community take care of mom and baby while she's healing and, you know, establishing the breastfeeding and regaining her strength and mobility. And they take care of the other children too. So, you know, that's more of a collective effort. And that's really what we're designed to have. I think what's really overlooked is also now, because we're so isolated and because we're so cut off from really good information around breastfeeding and healing and what our body needs and how much rest we need, right? Because, you know, our mind is sort of overpowering this imprint, but then our nervous system gets really dysregulated, right? Because it is a huge shock to the nervous system when you're isolated in a time that traditionally we're surrounded by caregivers. Yeah.
Yeah. The doula really comes in today's modern world where there isn't the support and doctors really come in at the end to catch the football, you know, and like, ta-da, like to have support, a birth doula, a postpartum doula, it feels like a luxury, but it really shouldn't be. It really is just the support of the transition of this really major time for mama and child to have this kind of support, especially since we're not as communal as we used to be.
I think one thing that is really crucial in labor in particular is the space holding, the anchoring of the patients, right? Not patients like doctor patients, patients like patience is a virtue, right? Birth can take a really long time. And honestly, when I interview with people and explain my role, a big part of my role is being the host, particularly when we're in settings where the providers haven't met each other before. So I work with a lot of OBs in the hospital that I know I've, you know, worked with for a long time, but almost always there's, you know, a nurse that's coming in on staff that I haven't met before. A lot of them I do, but usually there's some sort of unknown, you know, to me and to the patient, the family. What's actually really crucial in birth is a collaborative, unified circle around mama, where what we want birthing women to feel, this is really, really important, especially in a hospital setting. What we want you to feel is that not only does everyone in the room trust in you and feel love for you and feel respect for you as the birthing mom, but they actually have those same feelings toward each other.
Oh.
Because birthing is also a nervous system event, right? If we're relaxed, we're more primed to release oxytocin, right? Which is that feel-good hormone, the hormone that's released in orgasm, the hormone that drives the labor, contractions, contracting, expanding. So doulas can be there to foster a really positive environment You know, I tell my clients actually, we hear that doulas advocate a lot. Advocacy should be happening in pregnancy through education. So, your doula's role is to give you good information so that you can make your own informed choice. And you should know what every choice, what your preferences will be, again, in that birth map before we step into the labor in whatever setting. Because once we get into the labor, we should be focusing just on contracting and expanding efficiently. I never really interact with the staff in a clinical way. I might say, oh, we have a decision to make. Could we go over the risks and benefits? But when we step into the hospital, you know, we're in their jurisdiction. The nurses and the doctors, they are making very, very, very important decisions, right? They have to make decisions around things like fentanyl and Pitocin, that a mistake could be fatal. So they have a scope that's a very high responsibility. So when we go in there, we respect them completely. Now, when I walk into the birthing room, I have a set of skills that, you know, are not otherwise available. Things like positioning, things like very fleshed out comfort measures, things that can make your labor more efficient and more comfortable. And hospitals usually love that, right? Because that fleshes everything out. But our scopes are different and they both have a place. But what I tell everyone when you're preparing too, like, have a doula that really, you know, knows how to host your birth.
And somebody you really,
Fun, is a people person, knows how to, you know, how to be just like a charming, enjoyable person to be around.
I'm
Because
going to say
have
that
time
that's
to labor, you
what
know?
you're saying is so important to really interview your doula to make sure that they're such a good fit for your personality and what you want. And I love that you're saying, like, be a people person, charismatic, fun, have a great energy in the room as well. I can still remember my birth. And I actually did have a doula, but I did not pick the right doula.
Well, and it's, you know, you can have someone who all your friends loved and has 40 years of experience and has, you know, but also they can just not have, you can just not have an affinity for them. Again, it's almost like picking a partner or a best friend. Sometimes there's just something about this person that you know you'll be able to relax, right? So take that seriously. You know, always meet with your people in person. Anybody who's going to be in the room with you, some things we can't control. We don't know who's going to be on call for your nursing staff, right? But however, to the greatest extent, to the furthest extent you can control the vibe, the energy, make sure that you're feeling it out before, because at the end of the day, we are mammals, right? Our nervous systems are very perceptive. So if we're not completely relaxed, if we're not completely trusting of the energy around us, things will sort of stop a little bit. You know, we won't be able to fully relax in order to open. And I hope everyone has the experience of really feeling loved in this really vulnerable time, right? You know, like loved and respected.
Loved, respected, have the environment that you want because it is a profound experience. I was telling my daughter the other day, I remember her birth. I remember both of their birth. And they're like, yeah, but doesn't it rearrange in your mind so that you have another one? I'm like, no. I remembered the whole thing and I chose to have another one. Like, not because I disassociated from it. Like, I was fully present to the process of birth. And it is an initiation. The whole process is an initiation, not to be taken lightly. You're here in LA. What hospitals do you work with the most? I'm curious.
Now I'm mostly at Cedars.
That's where I gave birth.
Yeah, I'm mostly at Cedars, sometimes at St. John's.
Do you do any home births with a midwife?
I
Cool.
do. Yeah, I do home births, I do birth center births. It's a mix. Most of my clients are looking for, you know, some version of what we call physiologic birth, so lower medical intervention that's planned. And again, I have a lot of training and positioning and, you know, efficient labors and things like that. So I feel like a lot of people come in sort of looking for that. But yeah, I go to Cedars a lot. I'm all the way on the east side, so sometimes I'm at Huntington, but mostly Cedars. right
How
now.
many clients, like if somebody listening is like, everything about Morgan speaks to me, how does somebody find you? How many clients do you take a year? How do people work with you?
Well, I keep my client load really small because I spend a lot of time with my clients. And then when I do postpartum care, I'm there for usually 6 weeks at a time. So postpartum clients, I take one client every 2 months. And then births, some of my postpartum clients, I also do their full pregnancy and their labor. Birth clients that I work with through pregnancy and then go to the labor, I take 3 a month. I don't always take 3 a month, but no more than 3 a month.
Births can happen at any time. So, do you sometimes have the call in the middle of the night to show up for a birth?
Labors love to start in the middle of the night.
They do. They
Nice,
do.
quiet, and dark, and you know a tiger's not coming. They love, especially on a full moon. They love to
Oh,
go.
wow. Because I do feel like it's intensive work, being the work that you do, it's loving and beautiful, and your energy is so amazing. I look back and I wish you were my doula. But how do you take care of yourself?
Well, again, Ayurveda is really good at self-care in a lot of different ways. And I have to shout out my friend Julie Bernier again because I use her sleep rituals. She taught me, Ayurvedic sleep rituals for nighttime. And I use those to reset from a birth. So I have nervous system regrounding. After I go to a birth, I have a little protocol for coming off of that. And I'll tell you, as I get older, it's getting harder and harder to like go 2 days with very little sleep. So I have my own reset protocols, and honestly, I'll say just living more of an Ayurvedic lifestyle in general, you don't get as wrecked because you're already very attuned to the natural circadian rhythm. So I think that helps a lot. Just basic things, waking up with the sun, going to bed with the sun within the same windows, eating meals at the same time, keeping certain things very, very consistent so your body has these anchor points. When I do have to go, have kind of a haywire a week or a haywire a couple of days, my body resets a little easier just because my baseline is really aligned with nature.
Yeah, you're resetting with intention too, which I think most people, like especially a new mother, they do need that reset through that labor, right? Like, because a lot of times they can be laboring not through one night, but two nights.
I honestly believe, and I would be really interested to have this conversation with other birth workers, but we know that women can perceive the pheromones in other women. I do notice that I have a certain amount of adrenaline coming off of a birth where I have to actually, I usually do a little bean protocol afterwards too. It takes it out more quickly. And again, bean protocol and Ayurveda have a lot of
They
overlapping
do. They do.
principles, and the form is very similar. So I do my own little protocol, and I think it helps take the adrenaline out so I can start to, rest a little better. And then, I make sure that like I'm exposing myself to the sunrise, the sunset. I go to sleep shortly after that, and it helps reset.
You are doing such beautiful work. I'm really happy that you're sharing all this. I do think that bringing consciousness to the process of preparing the body for pregnancy, the process of nourishing, I call it deep nourishment while pregnant, not doing the American specialty, which is a free for all, and thinking that a prenatal is going to shore up all of your loose ends, because it's just not. There's nothing replaces deep nutrition, deep nourishment. And then afterwards, that support, not worrying about where your meals come from, because a warm, loving presence is there with knowledge, nourishing you while you connect with your baby and get grounded. I think the work that you're doing is incredibly special.
Well, thank you, Unique. I feel the same way about you. I'm such a huge fan.
Oh, thanks. For everybody listening, I know a few of my clients, I told them I was going to have you on, and they were just like, oh, that's so exciting. I want to learn so much more about how I should be caring for myself. And your Instagram handle is The Cottage Inside.
Yeah, it's just Cottage Inside.
Oh, okay. No, the get rid of the just Cottage Inside. And then what is your website the same?
Website is the same, cottageinside.com.
And I'm going to link everything. I'm going to link your bio. I'm going to link your website. I'm going to link your handle. I hope everybody visits the work you're doing and looks at the recipes, because they are very Bean Protocol and Ayurveda. Actually, I always say that the closest I got to healing on my journey would have been my time in Ayurveda, except that for Crohn's, it was just too much fat because of the mechanism at play. But I also just have a deep, deep, deep respect for the ancient healing modalities, because they're there for a reason and well studied, well used, well supported, and absolutely beautiful. So I'm excited to have this conversation and share this deep look at women's health and care during a really important time in our lives.
I love it. Maybe there's a pregnancy collaborative workshop in our future.
Yes, please. Absolutely. Totally. I'm here. I'm here for it. I think there's so much, a beautiful way to create amazing conversation. Well, thank you for joining me and for taking time out of your day to have this conversation. I'm excited to put it out there.
Thanks so much for having me. It was an honor.
Wow, what a beautiful and inspiring conversation. I hope that you enjoyed it and it gave you some food for thought. No matter where you are in your fertility journey, whether it's pregnant and looking to deeply nourish yourself and for postpartum, or you're contemplating fertility and how you want to nourish and prepare your incredible body for that amazing time in your life. And yeah. All right, wherever you are in this beautiful world, please take care of yourself.